Thank you very much. The reason that I think I can do my talk in just 10 minutes is because I think it summarizes many of the statements that have been made. So I'll just sort of go through this and put in a framework, maybe add a few numbers, but it doesn't really add any new ideas to what we've said today. But hopefully I can reinforce these. So as we've seen, mentioned the Euratom Treaty, one of the founding treaties. I'll just emphasize the preamble. You heard the Commission representative saying, well, it's not that important. But I think it is. I think it's fundamental, and this is really at the heart of my presentation. Is we're seeing that nuclear power under the Euratom Treaty, it's recognizing that nuclear energy represents an essential resource, an underlined essential resource to the development and invigoration of industry. And it's the purpose of the Euratom Treaty is to create the conditions necessary for the development of a powerful nuclear industry. Now, in some ways, you can't be clearer of what is than that, of what is the purpose of the treaty. So, again, we've been through the main chapters that people have talked about. People have highlighted, well, there's some good things. They talk about the Safeguards Agency. There is an international safeguards agency, so you can debate whether or not the EU needs a special one. It's very expensive, but it's highlighted as a good thing. But the other things we're talking about, promotion of research, dissemination of information, investments, joint undertaking, supplies, we've heard, etc. Okay. But these are not all absolutely essential, and as we've come back to, many of these are now redundant. So the main framework of my presentation is the financial support that you get from nuclear power from the Euratom Treaty towards nuclear power. And I think you can put this into two sectors. Firstly, direct support. And here I'll look at the framework program very briefly that people have mentioned, the Euratom loans that was mentioned, and then the international assistance programs. And then indirect support, again, that have been covered, but I'd really like to stress a couple of cases, the approval of state aid and the decommissioning of radioactive waste. So the framework program, we've been through these, been mentioned a number of times. I think one of the key things is to mention is the increase in budget that we're talking about for the seventh framework program. This is the summary over time of the different research programs on the left, and you see it's gone up from 3.8 billion to 73 billion in the seventh framework program. You'll see a huge increase between 6 and 7, from 17.5 to 73. This is because EU 15 to EU 25. It's gone up from a 5-year program to a 7-year program, and a general desire to increase R&D within the EU in terms of the Lisbon agenda, increased competitiveness. But the column on the right, the other column, is the percentage of energy budget, the energy nuclear gets within the overall framework budget. And you're seeing this is decreasing. And this is, for me, a fundamental point is there is less and less research and development money for energy, and therefore we need to prioritize it better. We need to use it for the right things and not waste it. And I'll say that this is energy and nuclear, so energy and the Euratom budget. As we've mentioned a number of times, they are separate issues. You have a framework program specifically for nuclear, the Euratom budget, and then you have a framework program for everything else. It's out on a limb. And as you see again here, I've underlined it. One is decision by the Parliament and the Council, and the other is decision by the Council. This is one of the clear democratic deficits of Euratom. In terms of comparing the two budgets, this is over time. You compare the framework program at the bottom the Euratom program at the bottom with all other energy on the top. And you're seeing around 60%, if you put the two together, goes to nuclear. And this is fission and fusion. And people must separate the two. The JRC is Joint Research Council. Yes. Centre, thank you. I always get it wrong. Joint Research Centre. And as we're seeing here, that is actually fission money. So what we're seeing, it's a shame Mr. Barrier has gone because I fundamentally disagree with his figures. He was talking in the sixth framework program of less than 200 going to fission. He's excluding the JRC money. But in general, you're seeing a significant increase in funding, and in particular if you look at fusion, over the years in the fourth, fifth and sixth framework program, fusion is receiving about 200 million euros a year. This compares with all renewables as of 100 million. So fusion is receiving twice the amount that fusion is, and again that contradicts the information that you've given before. But it goes up in this 2011 to 2013 budget, EST's estimate, because it's not 100% clear what this will be, but the indications are that the fusion budget will go up to 600 million euros a year. So it's a 3 times increase in the fusion budget, and we've still to see what renewables will end up with. The next section is on Euratom loans. Again, this has been mentioned. Euratom loans have been given since 1977. The reason that they haven't been given to nuclear power in Western Europe until now, or over the last number of years, was because nobody's been building nuclear power plants in Western Europe. In 1999, the loan there is for Bulgaria, and in 2004, it's for Ukraine and Romania. I would say that these are not all used for safety, as it was implied. The Romanian reactor in particular was a completion of a Canadian design of reactor. So it is used for expanding the nuclear industry where they can build them, and up until now that's been in Eastern Europe. In terms of who has received Euratom loans, France has received most of them, 34%, followed by Italy, Germany, Belgium, etc. So you can see that it tends to go, or historically has gone, to the main nuclear players. And were the Euratom loan program to continue, it's still to be decided. In 2003, the Commission proposed to extend the facility by 2 billion euros. I guess it's slightly unfortunate that they have the Euratom Treaty in this regard, because it requires unanimity, as all decisions on Euratom do, and a number of countries, like the Austrians, managed to block this, and so it wasn't approved. So there is 800 million euros remaining within the Euratom loan facility. Projects are being prepared. It isn't a dead fund. It will be used, or may be used in Bulgaria for Belina. And as I mentioned, this is softer loans. It's good financing for the sector. And then international cooperation programs come under Euratom. Again, negotiated by the Commission, approved by the Council, not the Parliament. They're designed to enhance nuclear cooperation for nuclear safety, new reactor designs, waste management, non-proliferation, and they're currently with China, Kazakhstan, Japan, Russia, Ukraine, and Uzbekistan. So these are very much a forerunner and can be used for the development of the sector as a whole. This is an example in Eastern Europe. The FAR program was for the former countries in which are now members of the EU, the former accession countries, and TACIS in the CIS countries. So over this 15-year period, 2 billion euros from EU grants have been given for the nuclear sector in Eastern Europe. Primarily this goes to Western contractors. Some, of course, is used, it's all used in Eastern Europe, but it's Western consultants doing jobs. And it's money for the Western nuclear industry. There are some safety advantages, but one would have to question whether or not it's justified, in particular given the expenditure. In terms of within the FAR energy budget, so those former accession countries between 1990 and 1998, 180 million of the 220 million energy budget was for nuclear safety, and 14.3 was on renewables. So by focusing on nuclear safety, you're not allowing the alternatives. So in many ways, you're delaying the closure of reactors that need to be closed. And then the final section is to look at indirect financial support. And I guess for me, this is really the key question that we're talking about, is people have talked about the introduction of the Electricity Market Directive, and how does this balance with the Euratom requirements? So on the top here, you have the quote from the Euratom Treaty, that is to create the conditions necessary for the speedy establishment and growth of the nuclear industry. And you have to balance this with the electricity market requirements for a level playing field. And in particular, competition between generators, a fair competition between generators. And we can see this in particular in the specific rulings that we currently have been made or in the process of being made on the nuclear sector. So there's four examples. One I won't cover because I know Daughter is going to cover it later, but the first two are of particular importance. So British Energy, it's a privately owned nuclear operator. It's not integrated, it's not a vertical utility, therefore it has to sell its electricity on the market. The market price for electricity went down, therefore the profits of the company went down to such a degree that there was an emergency loan given by the British government to stop the company going bankrupt. This had to be approved by the Commission, which it was, on condition that you had a restructuring program. This restructuring program has been done, put in place, and the Commission has now approved it. But the final quote is really quite fundamental. It says, the Commission says that the measures foreseen by the UK authorities are appropriate to address the combinations of objectives pursued and which are fully endorsed by the Euratom Treaty. So they're using the Euratom Treaty as a justification for the financial package that they're getting from the government. And we see the same thing with the establishment of the Nuclear Decommissioning Authority. This comes out of the whole British energy restructuring. The government has taken responsibility for the waste management within the UK, the public sector, the British Nuclear Fuels, which own reactors, that own the reprocessing plant. So the Commission promised to launch an investigation into this, which is currently ongoing. But the reasons that they're saying is this is an in-depth inquiry which will allow the Commission to judge, in particular, whether the contribution of setting up of the NDA to the achievement, of the Euratom Treaty's objectives outweighs the impact of aid on the internal market. I mean, it really can't be clearer. This is what they're deciding. It really will be a test case. Is what is more important, the Euratom Treaty or the single market? And as we've talked about, the decommissioning funds, so I'll miss out these last two, if we go on to decommissioning, they are huge. The companies are supposed to set aside funds to pay for activities that will take place in a number of decades from now. The work that we're talking about is the hundreds of millions of euros. So you have these huge funds, and some of the funds that the utilities have are under their control, as is the case in France and Germany. In other countries, utilities don't have access to these funds. The funds are kept by the government or an independent body. And people have talked about market concentration, is the utilities coming in and buying up other companies. Now, if you have a 200 or 100 million euro budget fund here that you put aside for decommissioning, but you can then use for other purposes, like buying up other companies, then this is a great commercial advantage to you. And as you can see in this graph, you can see that those companies, EDF, RWE, E.ON, that have access to the fund are more active in the market. So decommissioning is a fundamental in terms of market liberalisation. It's a fundamental in terms of waste management. But yet, the Commission hasn't taken action on it. The European Parliament called for legislation in this area. They said this should be done under the electricity market rules. The Commission and the Council then put pressure on the Parliament to drop it. And finally, they've come up with a compromise in which they deal with this issue under Euratom. And how do they deal with it? They produce an annual report. So it is very clear that it's a fundamental issue. It's of growing importance because more and more companies are finding that they haven't got sufficient money for their waste management. But yet, it's not being dealt with. So those are a few areas in terms of indirect funding where the Commission is not taking action. And then finally, maybe just thoughts in terms of my presentation. I thought a few things on the Euratom Treaty. Again, they've been covered. So the draft constitutional treaty doesn't propose to abolish the Euratom Treaty but allow a separate identity. Five countries were mentioned calling for a conference. I would highlight here that Denmark wasn't one of them. And it would seem very strange, and it would be very interesting to know from those who are involved in it why it wasn't the case. But the timing is possible. I mean, we're seeing the negotiations are starting, people are starting to form positions. Our Irish colleagues said that the Irish government is forming its white paper on what to do on the constitution. So if people want to see the reform of Euratom in the next constitution, they should start thinking about it now. So, thank you very much.
Thank you very much for your very informative 10 minutes. I'd like to give you an answer on why Denmark was not recommending a conference on removing the Euratom, but that's going to be stealing time from other people, so I'll give it to you outside instead. I think it's really a scandal. But I think we can just manage one question to Anthony.
Thank you. It's not the question, it's a comment. I mean, as always, your analysis was really brilliant. But I think at one point, you, at least on the slide, you made a minor mistake. There's no assistance program ever in nuclear for Japan or China. We have an awful lot of Euratom cooperation agreements, which you can also see, let's say, on the various aspects, and not all of them are favorable from our point of view, but there's no assistance program. Assistance program, Kazakhstan, yes, Russia, yes, and all the new member states, but not these two.
Okay.
Okay, thank you. Thank you very much, Anthony.